the J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. And Sam, the pressure is really beginning to build down at the foot of the table. And it looks like after the weekend's match day 29, our hoped for three-way title race might have its first casualty.
Yeah, it would appear so. I think Hiroshima eventually stretched themselves a bit too far. They played well in the Emperor's Cup, got through to the semi-final there, but yeah, the team was stretched a bit too thin. They were rotating, and you can't play a weekend team against Kawasaki because they can take you apart, and that's kind of what happened. So that's a shame, but we've still got a cracking title race between F. Marinos and Frontale, and that relegation dogfight is fantastic. Nobody wanted to win, really, except for Consadole Sapporo. So, yeah, all still a bit of a mire down there.
Most definitely. So, yeah, we've got a lot to talk about at both ends of the J1 table after match day 29 was played over the weekend. And later on in the episode, we'll be joined by a buoyant Neil Debnam after Yessa Kawasaki ultimately swept aside a much-changed Hiroshima team on Saturday evening at Todoroki. But before we get on to the weekend's top flight action, let's take a quick look back at events from last midweek. Of course, the Emperor's Cup quarterfinals took place, and we also had one J1 fixture that had to be made up between Yokohama F. Marinos and Shonan. It was a Kanagawa derby, but yes, we'll begin with the Emperor's Cup, Sam. And J2 Kofu provided the biggest shock. They beat Fukuoka 2-1 after extra time. Their reward is a semi-final date with Kashima, who won 1-0 away at Kobe. So obviously the bookmakers will have Antlers, a very much a short-priced favourite in that tie, but Kofu deserve massive amounts of credit for making it through. And yes, in a one-off game, as we've seen, the J-League is definitely the most unpredictable league across all divisions in the world. So you still have to give Kofu a fighter's chance in that one, wouldn't you?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Avispa was the third J1 team that they've knocked out. They'd already knocked out Tosu and Sapporo. So, yeah, they've proven they can do it against J1 opposition. And Kashima, yeah, they're a big name and whatnot, but they're not necessarily playing amazing football. So, yeah, one-off game, who knows? You've got to give Kofu a really fighting chance. Obviously, Kashima will be the favourites and should go into, and they'd be expecting to make the final. But, yeah, there's good players in that Kofu team. So, yeah, you can't write them off at all.
No, that is for definite. And on the other side of the draw, well, we had the opportunity to have two J2 teams in the semis, of course, as the Tokyo Verde made it through to the quarterfinals, but they fell at the last eight stage by losing 2-1 to Kyoto. Sanga will face Hiroshima in the semifinals. Sanfrecce staging a dramatic late fight back in the final 5 minutes to overturn Adam Taggart's first half goal to triumph 2-1 over Cerezo Osaka. A veteran Yoshifumi Kashiwa drawing them level in the 86th minute. Then the super sub Takumu Kawamura, of course, the scorer of one of the goals of the season the previous weekend. Well, he was at it again with the winner in the 91st minute, as we'll come on to later on with Neil when we talk about the Kawasaki Hiroshima game. And as you've mentioned off the top of the episode, Sam, it looks like Sanfrecce just stretched their resources too thin by focusing on Wednesday night. But, they have a perfect opportunity to punch a ticket to the ACL if they can win the Emperor's Cup, let alone the fact that they're likely to finish in the top three. But a trophy beckons, and they'll definitely fancy their chances against Sanga in the semis.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I'm sure they'll fully concentrate on that Emperor's Cup tie, whereas Kyoto are still likely to be in this relegation battle. So it just depends. Do Kyoto think I've got to prioritise the league here? Because they did rotate quite heavily against Tokyo Verde. They did just about enough. I thought Paulinho, their new Brazilian signing, I think I mentioned him a couple of weeks ago, he played very well. He looked like a really good player, but he's just lacking fitness. Didn't make any minutes at the weekend. But yeah, then get him fit. Yeah, he looks like a good player for them. And they battled hard against Tokyo Verde, who I thought played really well. Another J2 team that did themselves no harm at all. They played well. They kept it going right towards the end. But Kyoto just had enough, and that should make for an interesting semi-final. Again, you'd say Hiroshima would be the clear favourites in that one. I think just just with the lack of focus maybe from Kyoto. If they've got another eye on trying to stay in J1, I think that could be maybe the most important factor in that game. But yeah, it was another great performance from Hiroshima, and Cereza must be furious that they'd let a one goal lead slip to lose 2-1 twice in about 5 days. It was not a great week for them.
No, not at all. The two semi-finals will be played on the 5th of October, with the final a couple of weeks after that. And as I mentioned, last Wednesday, Yokohama F. Marinos took on Shonan at the Nissan Stadium in a rearranged game that had to be postponed initially due to the typhoon that passed through Kanto a few weeks ago. And wouldn't you know it, the heavens opened and it this game was played in pretty much torrential rain as well as, history repeated. I guess this fixture was destined to be played in heavy rain, I suppose. But at the end of the day or the end of the evening, F. Marinos returned to the top of the J1 table with a 3-0 victory over Shonan. It took them a while to break plucky Belmare down, but Takuma Nishimura got them going with the opener in the 56th minute. Anderson Lopez gave the hosts some breathing room with a 70th minute penalty, and new boy Jan Mateus made his debut, one to remember. He came off the bench just past the hour and then scored a terrific third for his new club with a minute left to cap the scoring. So that was quite an instant impact from the new boy, Sam. And that's the last thing the rest of J1 needs, is for F. Marinos to unveil a new flashy Brazilian right before the stretch run.
Yeah, not ideal for anyone. I mean, when he came on, to be honest, I thought he looked really awful. I think most of his touches were off. He lost possession quite a bit, but obviously maybe he's just a little bit rusty because this goal was fantastic. So, yeah, just get a bit of fitness. And if they've got another player, a bit like when they signed Mateus for the end of the run in 2019, I wonder if he can have a similar impact. Probably, maybe not quite as big, but, yeah, it's a terrific goal. So he's obviously got a little bit in his locker. So, yeah, it's just another weapon for F. Marinos that, yeah, Frontale fans especially won't be delighted to see. And, yeah, Shonan weren't either. They tried hard in this game. They battled well. They had plenty of chances themselves. But, yeah, it was just one where Marinos just turned the screw just enough. And it was a professional 3-0 victory.
All right, then. So we'll move to the weekend's action, and we'll begin, taking our cue from the most recent episode of Extra Time down in the relegation dogfight. And we'll kick things off with the only game played in J1 on Sunday. It was up at the Sapporo Dome when Sapporo hosted Rock Bottom Iwata. These two entered the match day tied for the worst defensive record in the league in terms of goals conceded. And Iwata's goal difference took another hit. And, well, it basically counts as an extra point against them that they would have to make up on the teams above them if they were to stage a great escape in their final six games. After a 4-0 hiding up at the Dome to Sunday lunchtime. Sam, it was a very early start for you over in the UK, but I'm sure your morning was brightened by one of your favourites, Akito Fukumori, curling in a 25-yard free kick to give Consadole a 10th-minute lead.
Oh, it absolutely was. I mean, this season's not been his best, really. He's been dropped for a few games because they just were so bad defensively. And Fukumori playing at the back, I mean, it's quite a luxury because he doesn't really defend that well. He's not really a centre-back, not really a left-wing-back either. So, yeah, it's kind of, he plays that quarterback role, but like you can't really just rely on him or just carry him if you're defending so poorly. So he come back in here, and this was just vintage Fukumori, a terrific free kick, a fantastic effort, great technique on it, and it set Sapporo on their way, and it was a hammer blow for Iwata, because coming into this game, I thought, given how the weekend had gone previously, they had a chance here. Like Sapporo are a team that are always going to give you a chance if you just get at them a little bit. Yes, you have to defend pretty well for large periods, but yeah, they didn't even have the chance to defend well because there's nothing you can do about this goal. So yeah, fantastic for Fukumori. Hopefully that kickstarts him a little bit more. And yeah, it started Sapporo on their way, and I thought they were very good against, admittedly, a pretty poor Iwata team.
Yeah, they just never got into the game, did they, Jubilo? Gabriel Xavier turned in a low cross from Takuro Kaneko to make it 2-0 in the 21st minute, and that saw them through to halftime in the comfort zone. And then after Jubilo defender Ricardo Grassa was sent off for a sliding studs-up challenge into Lucas Fernandez's shin in the 65th minute. Well, I mean, it was pretty much curtains for Iwata. Then even their, you know, their penchant for late drama. I think, yeah, at 10 men and, yeah, two goals down, it wasn't going to be their afternoon. And the writing was well and truly on the wall by that stage. Consadole added salt to Iwata wounds at the death when Tomoki Takamine's attempted ball across the six-yard box was deflected past Ryuki Miura by Makito Ito for an own goal, though in typical J-League style, Takamine was credited with the goal, of course. And Tsuyoshi Ogashiwa had the last word, I'm sure brightening up Charlotte Patterson's morning as well over in the UK. Ogashiwa blasted past Miura in the 6th minute of second half stoppage time for his first league goal of the season. And factor in their two disallowed goals, Sam. Sapporo had the ball in the net 6 times. I guess it's just one of those Sapporo Dome romps they have, you know, 2 or 3 times a season. Iwata were the unfortunate victims on this occasion. And, well, we can talk briefly about the situation for both teams as we, you know, really get into the nitty-gritty of the stretch run here. Both of these teams still have 6 games to play. Iwata are well and truly adrift at the bottom now, 5 points behind 16th placed Fukuoka, although they do have a game in hand on them. But they still have to play 3 top 6 sides in their last 6 games and 3 fellow dogfighters. So they face Shimizu in what's sure to be a highly charged Shizuoka derby in match day 31. And they finish with Gamba and Kyoto. So the fixtures are kind of still there for them. Sam, they don't have to play any of the top 3 in the remainder of the season. So I don't think both of us think they're going to be prove that they're good enough. But I mean, it's there in front of them, and it's not an impossible equation, is it?
It's not impossible, but their best 2 games are the last 2 against Gamba and Kyoto, and I'm worried that they're probably out of it by then. Cerezo Osaka next up. Difficult game. They've just come back into maybe a little bit of form. Shimizu are not going to want to lose to Iwata either. And then the next one's Kashima and F. Marinos. So, yeah, I just don't see it, to be honest. I don't see them getting being still in contention before those really winnable games against Gamba and Kyoto. So while it's still mathematically possible, you never know. They've shown decent fighting spirit in a lot of games this season. But, yeah, I really struggle to see Iwata getting out of it. Do you give them any more hope than that?
Well, I have to hold my hands up and just admit I just made a glaring mistake. I said they didn't have to play any of the top 3. Thanks for pointing out that, yes, their game in hand is F. Marinos away. So it doesn't get any harder than that, obviously. Well, I mean, it is definitely possible because some of the teams above them are traveling almost as badly. So if they can, well, if they can win the derby, that's got to give them some sort of impetus, some sort of kick. And it's got to prove to themselves that it can be done. So I won't rule them out until that game is played. And if they lose that, then okay, that's probably going to be their death knell. But yeah, in this crazy league, you know, we've seen teams go on quick runs where we thought they were pretty much dead and buried. So yeah, let's wait and see what happens in that derby. But I'll give them a puncher's chance. For Sapporo, it does look much better for them now. Obviously, Sam has 2 straight wins. They're up to 11th on 34 points, 6 points clear of Fukuoka in the promotion relegation spot. And the Fukuoka supporters, you're probably going to be sick of us mentioning where you sit after match day 29. But yes, you've slipped back behind Gamba this past weekend. So that is the line of demarcation, Fukuoka now. And Sapporo still have a game in hand on Avispa as well. So they're not quite out of the woods. They're not quite as high, obviously, as Nagoya and Reds, who are well and truly out of danger, but they're just about there, Sam. It might even take one more win for them to lock up their safety.
Yeah, I think one more win, and the way I'd imagine they're looking at match day 32 and Avispa for Gwogra, I think that's probably where they can probably keep their J1 position. I mean, it's Marinos and Kawasaki before that, so it's not the ideal next 2 games, but yeah, after that it's a little bit easier. That Avispa, I think, is just the big game. And if they can win that, I think they'll be safe. But yeah, J-League, you never know. And maybe that's a big win for Avispa there and it drags Sapporo right back in it.
Yeah, well, it wouldn't surprise any of us at all, I don't think, if that were to happen. So, yeah, things don't look great for Iwata, but they're still in there fighting, as we said, despite that very disappointing result on Sunday afternoon. So second from bottom remain Vissel Kobe. They hosted Nagoya on Saturday, a Nagoya side who I've pretty much just mentioned were as good as safe after their win in the previous round took them 8 points clear of 16th. So the onus was on Vissel with everything on the line to take this game by the scruff of the neck. And Yoshinori Muto's surging 35-yard run through the center in the 16th minute before he dug out a shot that flashed wide of Mitch Langerak's right-hand post was hopefully a sign of things to come. But, Sam, unfortunately, it generally wasn't, was it?
No, this was really like the movable object of meeting the resistible force. This was a really awful game of football. No one really looked that good going forward. It was generally Muto or nothing for Kobe. He tried really hard. He had a fair amount of runs forward. He had a couple of chances, but generally anything on target, Langerak was quite comfortable in saving. At the other end, Nagoya offered very little, really. There were a couple of moments where Inagaki got in, just shanked his shot wide. I think, Leonardo had a chance, there was Morishita had a chance, but not really great too much. There was one massive chance for Kobe when there was a header onto the post, then Tula followed up, had to score and didn't, and that, yeah, it was just that moment passed them by, and they didn't create enough of those, Kobe, and it was, yeah, the impetus should have been on them. There should have been a bit more oomph about the way they were playing, but there just wasn't, I don't think. And we've questioned a couple of times, like, considering how Shonan play in Kyoto, and there's a real fight there. Is there the fight in these players for a relegation battle? And, yeah, I'm still yet to see it. There's quality in there somewhere. But, yeah, is the mentality there for them? Did you see any spark from Kobe in this? Did you think, yeah, there is something there they can get out of it? Or are you a little bit more worried now than maybe before the game?
Well, yeah, I mean, we just keep saying that they have so much quality there, they're eventually going to dig themselves out. But, I mean, I know they do have two games in hand on pretty much all of the teams around them. But, I think they're simply just going to run out of time, aren't they? It just looks a completely rudderless ship. And, yeah, I mean, Muto trying to drive them on. And, you know, where are his mates coming along for the ride? Things I hate to say, like, you know, they don't want it, or they, you know, they're not trying. I mean, obviously they're trying to win the game, but it oftentimes it comes off that it looks like they're not. And it's, as we've said so many times this year, it must be so frustrating for the supporters and, everyone behind the scenes at the club as well. And I'm sure, obviously, for the players themselves, they want to be doing better. But, you know, another flat performance like this where... A team as good as on the beach. I think we saw this past weekend, Nagoya, and whether it's harsh to say FC Tokyo are already on the beach, but definitely their game away at Gunma meant a lot more to Gunma than it did to Tokyo, and I think that showed. And you know, Nagoya were happy to just see this game out, basically, and yeah, Kobe weren't able to take those really clear-cut chances. The Muto one early on, I mean, it's the end of a surging run, but he's still got a lot to do to beat Langerak from the D. And that one you mentioned inside the last 5 minutes, Sam, when Nanase Ino headed against the post. And, yeah, Mateus Thura, he'll be having nightmares about that chance from inside the six-yard box when the entire goal was gaping and he shot basically straight at Mitch Langerak's legs. And, you know, fair play to Langerak for standing up and making that terrific save. But, yeah, obviously a moment like that could have been the moment that kickstarted the rest of Kobe's season. But as it is, we're left to wait, and we're left to see what's going to happen in this Kansai Derby to end all Kansai Derbies. It's coming up this Sunday when Vissel host Gunma. It's I don't know. They're both coming off nil-nil draws, Sam, so I'm not sure what sort of a spectacle we'll get, but for absolute sheer drama and nail-biting tension, it could just about be the game of the season.
Yeah, it could well be. I mean, the reverse fixture was one of the worst games that has been played this season. It was fully lacking in quality. But yeah, the tension, the situation surrounding both teams, it should make for a fascinating game, especially if Kobe have beaten Tokyo in midweek. That's a big if at the moment, but that puts 1 point between both teams. It could be result in the loser being in the relegation places. It just, yeah, it proves to be a fascinating tie. And I mean, I'll be interested to hear what Alan Gibson, how he stretched across that game emotionally, because, yeah, it should be a highly charged atmosphere and a really interesting game. But, yeah, quality for both teams has been sorely lacking. So it might not be the greatest footballing match, but it should be really entertaining for a neutral.
Yeah, I reckon. So, yeah, you're right. They play their game, one of their games in hand at home against Tokyo on Wednesday night. Then they host Gamba in the Kansai Derby on Sunday. And after that, well, another 6-pointer against Fukuoka. That one's away. And then in between their final four games, they host Shonan in their other game in hand, Sam. But how about the other three fixtures, three of their last four against the current top three? Hiroshima at home, Kawasaki away, and F. Marinos at home on the final day of the season. So, well, we're about to find out if they're good enough and if they're up for the fight, because, they're absolutely, I don't know if you could, a script writer could pen a better set of fixtures, three fellow dogfighters and the three current residents of the top three in their last six games after they take care of Wednesday night's business. So it's going to be absolutely epic. And if the listeners are tired of us talking about Kobe's situation, well, you better buckle up for the last stages of this season, because they're going to be getting an awful lot of coverage. And their demise or their Lazarus rise up the table will obviously keep us very busy in the closing stages of the season.
Oh, it will do. It's an incredible set of fixtures. And it kind of makes this weekend's game, it was so important to beat a team with nothing to play for in Nagoya. And Tokyo, likewise. Those are the games that are the easiest games, really, for them on paper. Because Gamba are fighting for their lives. Avispa will be fighting for their lives. And even the teams at the top. I mean, you're facing Kawasaki and F. Marinos. There's 3 points between them at the top of the table. They're not going to be on the beach kind of allowing Vissel a nice, easy victory in the last couple of days of the season. So, yeah, there's some epic encounters coming in. Yeah, they've been a story all season, obviously, with being so low for so long, having been great last season, so many players, all the money, everyone knows everything about them. And, yeah, the closer they get to potentially dropping into J2, it becomes more and more a story. And Iniesta at Rulli Morioka becomes almost a reality.
Wow, yes, indeed. it would be epic, but it would be a crying shame at the same time. But if they go down, then they've deserved it. And a lot of J2 supporters can look forward to some glamorous ties hosting the rock stars of Vissel next season. But a long way to go, of course. And if they're good enough, they'll dig themselves out. We'll wait and see. So let's stay in Kansai. And a game that we've touched on already talking about Vissel's struggles is Gamba Osaka hosting FC Tokyo. Obviously, Kobe's next two opponents. They also drew 0-0 at the Panasonic Stadium. This wasn't much to speak of either, Sam, as a spectacle. Tokyo didn't do much at all, to be honest. And I think we can focus mainly on Gamba talking about this game. I guess their supporters were up in arms 10 minutes into the second half when their striker Leandro Pereira nodded a long ball over the top past Yasuki Kimoto and dashed away from the Tokyo defender, who slid in very riskily in the box and perhaps got enough of the ball as he caught Pereira sending it into the arms of Tokyo keeper Jakub Slovic. The Gamba supporters leapt from their feet at the sight of their striker on the floor, Sam. But were you happy that Kimoto got enough of the ball and any penalty claims were waved away?
Yeah, rare as it is that I might praise a referee on this podcast, I thought he got the right decision here. I think it was just enough of a tackle from Kimoto. Very risky, as you say, to go to ground in the manner that he did. But he did get just enough of the ball for me. So no penalty, unfortunately, for Gamba.
All right, then. And so we mentioned the flashpoint in the Kobe-Nagoya game, that huge chance for Vissel inside the last 5 minutes. With 15 minutes left at the Panasonic Stadium, Yuya Fukuda curled in a terrific cross from out on the left to the edge of the six-yard box. So both Darwan and Patrick Rose, and the former drew a point-blank reflex save from the Tokyo keeper, Jakub Slovic. So I guess the Vissel chance, Eno heading against the post, and Tula seeing his follow-up saved by Langerak. That was the key moment in the Vissel game, and this turned out to be the big chance that Gumba were craving, and they got. But unfortunately for them, Slovic stood tall to deny Darwan.
Yeah, this wasn't quite as easy as the Tula chance. I don't think Darwan did well to meet the ball in the first place. But yeah, it's terrific reflexes from Slovic. He doesn't have much time to react to that. Yes, it's fairly close to him, but it's a really good save. Darwan will probably think he maybe should have done better. But yeah, I think you have to give a bit of credit to the goalkeeper here, because and it wasn't always that way in this game, because there was another flashpoint, I think midway through the first half, where there's a ball through and Slovic is like 100 miles out of his goal for no real reason. And Leandro Pereira gets onto it, but he kind of panics seeing Slovic coming at him straight away and just shoots so early. But if he had a little bit of composure just to take it round Slovic, and then he could have ran towards the empty net. But yeah, they didn't quite have that on a few occasions here, Gamba, the kind of composure to create a chance or just to take a little touch somewhere. So yeah, it was just one where they were the better team in this game, I thought. But yeah, didn't quite have the quality when it mattered.
Well, yeah, I hope Slovic hasn't been watching Park Il-gyu DVDs and doesn't dashing 50 yards out of his box into his repertoire, because we could do with less of that at FC Tokyo, and certainly my blood pressure wouldn't be able to handle that on a regular basis. But yeah, okay, so we've mentioned the point from this game took Gumba above Fukuoka. How are you feeling if you're a Gumba supporter at the end of this game, Sam? As you said, they were the better team. I'll hold my hands up and agree there. And, you know, Tokyo didn't have... I think you could see that Tokyo don't really have a lot to play for in their... well, they've still got two games in hand and a lot of the teams around them. But I don't think... they're going to be finishing much higher up the table than where they currently are in eighth. So, as I said, this game meant a lot more to Gumba. 3 points would have been absolutely precious for them. They'll take one, but how are they feeling at the end of this 90 minutes, do you think?
Yeah, mixed emotions. I think it's a decent point for them. They probably would have accepted it beforehand, but it was a game that was there to win. And it's two games now, like the Tosu game last time, and then this one, where they've looked pretty toothless up front. But they had got a little bit of... joy out of their kind of more route one football against Hiroshima. I know they conceded 5, but they scored 2. They looked like they could score goals. They were better against Nagoya and then reasonable against Avispa, but it's kind of that impact has kind of waned away a little bit. I think teams have figured it out a little bit more defensively. And like Patrick and Leandro Pereira, other than that one chance I mentioned, didn't really have too much of a sniff on goal here. So that would be the worry. Defensively, they were a lot better than they were against Tosu, so that was a positive. So, yeah, really mixed emotions. Their fixtures look okay. I mean, Vissel, obviously, we mentioned that's the massive game, and they've got the Dubalo, who I think will be relegated by the time they play them. So it's reasonable on paper. So I think just to, and that psychological bit of getting out of the relegation zone as well, I think that can do wonders for a team. And like, Avispa, but yeah, them dropping back into it, that will give them real cause for concern as well. So yeah, I think they'll accept the point, but yeah, there's just a slight worries, I think, going forward.
Right. Okay, then. All right. So, still a lot to play for. And obviously, Gumba, one of the biggest fish in the J1 pond. And we'll be obviously following them very closely in the weeks to come. And yeah, that absolute blockbuster coming up on Sunday when they visit Kobe. I imagine fans of both clubs might be watching from behind the sofa. But it's going to be an absolutely fascinating game. There's no question about that. So, we mentioned at the intro of the podcast that the pressure is really beginning to build. I guess that was clear to see in both of these games that we've just referenced, the nil-nils at Kobe and at Gumba. And next we'll move on to two more draws. These were of the 1-1 variety, and two dogfighters squared off at Nihon Daira. And ultimately, Sam, the shares were spoiled. The spoils were shared. I always get that mixed up. When S-Pulse hosted Shonan, the host Shimizu made a superb start when Thiago Santana's 25-yard drive flew into the net off the fingertips of Shonan keeper Kosei Tani in the 12th minute. But from there, home keeper Shuichi Gonda was by far the busier, keeping out numerous efforts, including good ones from Hiroyuki Abe, Shuto Machino, and Naoki Yamada. But basically, this was Shonan just continuing to build pressure throughout the remainder of the 90 minutes. And they finally got their reward in the 6th minute of, five were posted second half stoppage time. The referee allowed Shonan to continue on. And that man, Wellington, headed home a ball into the box from Akimi Barada in the 96th minute to spark wild scenes amongst the Belmare players and staff. A potentially precious point, just rewards. As I said, they just kept on going. Sam, I don't know how much they're paying Wellington, but he's justified it all with that brilliant last gasp header.
Yeah, he has, because he hasn't done a great deal this season. I think his legs are slightly going, but it's a real weapon, isn't he, when you can bring him on for the last 10 minutes. And yeah, in aerially, there's very few that can match up with him. And this was a tremendous header. Just, he was the only person in that area that was going to win the ball. And it was, powered in past Gonda, who had a fantastic game up until that point. Because I thought, it was a really deserved goal for Shonan. Like, from the time that Shimizu took the lead, and you think with their attacking players, they might go on and hit two or three. But Shonan just pushed them back and back. And Shimizu, defensively, they're not quite there, really, are they? So the chances were coming. Gonda just was level to most of them, which is great for the Japan national team. If Gonda is going to continue in that role as number one, he looked very good here. But Shonan just worked hard, and eventually got their reward. So, they absolutely deserve that. I think this was a very good point for them. Like, you can compare points between, like, the point that Vissel get, the point that Gamba get. But this was a different manner of point in the way that they just kept going. They looked fantastic, I thought, going forward. And fully deserved that. So it just shows we've said this a couple of times, the difference between Shonan and Kyoto, as we'll get onto, and Gamba and Vissel. It just seems like they are really up for this dogfight and kind of reveling in the pressure of it more so than the other teams. I think that came through in this game. So I thought, really good for Shonan. Shimizu, what do you reckon? Do you think they're 4 points clear? Do you think they may have been thinking that they'd done enough and were just dropping off here? Or do you think they're still probably safe?
It's a good question. I don't think they would consider themselves safe, so I don't think we should either. But I'm sure Zé Ricardo will have given them a pretty strong dressing down at the end of this game, because I think, as you say, after they took the lead, they pretty much stopped playing and they allowed Shonan to dictate the rest of this game to them, basically. And so I think they weren't able to stick to their principles throughout the remainder of this game. And I think it's maybe that's just an indication of the pressure that they're all feeling as well. Because, I agree. Normally you'd expect them to be over the hill and far away and, build on the confidence of that early goal, because it was a terrific strike from Thiago Santana. But, they basically had the rest of this game played on their patch at Shonan's discretion. And, Belmare, they would have felt really, really hard done to had they left with nothing. And I guess by the letter of the law, the referee could have blown at the end of the five allotted minutes. But thankfully for them, he allowed them to play on. And, just before we wrap this game up, Sam, do you know what Takashi Inui did after the full-time whistle? Because I know he was subbed off in the 66th minute, but he was yellow carded after the match. He didn't storm onto the pitch and have a go at the ref about playing a few extra seconds, did he?
To be honest, I don't know about that, because that game finished while the others were carrying on, so I just closed that window at full time was that. So I'll have to go and check about that. It's not like Takashi Inui to rile up anyone or do anything after being substituted. So I'll have to see what he's done there.
Well, he's getting a bit of a reputation, I think, judging on this incident, leading on from how he left Cerezo Osaka. But, hold my hands up. I have no idea what happened, but just the official record shows that, he was yellow carded after the match. So if you know, listeners, answers on a postcard, please. So, it is they're kind of in no man's land, aren't they, Shimizu? Obviously, this win, if they had have been able to hang on, that would have taken them on to 34 points, the same amount as Sapporo. And we've just said that basically Sapporo probably need one more win to lock up their safety. And so I guess Shimizu would have been in the same boat, and we would have been feeling, I think, a lot better about them, because although, Sapporo can throw in a result like they did against Iwata, they're far more up and down than a team like Shimizu has been in the last couple of months. It's also a fascinating fixture list for S-Pulse to come. It's Fukuoka away next, then obviously that huge Shizuoka derby when they host Iwata. Then they've got to travel to Kawasaki, host Kashima, and then visit Sapporo on the final day of the season. So I guess a Sapporo team with on the beach with nothing to play for, but also with the handbrake off, could be, I don't know, could be the best opponents to play, or they could be in some respects the most dangerous. So they won't be counting any chickens. They'll simply hope that some of the teams below them have just dropped off, and their safety might have been sealed by that point, just by the other teams failing to pick up any points at all. So I think for S-Pulse, they're almost there. They could just about sniff it, but I think that was the problem, as you said. That was a problem after they took the lead on Saturday. They might have eased off and, as we said, allowed Shonan to dictate terms in that game. So, I'll pin you down. What do you reckon? You reckon they've done enough to this point, or you reckon they've got enough wins in those remaining fixtures that I've just spelled out to make sure that they're well and truly safe?
Yeah, I don't think they've done enough yet, but if you could pick two fixtures to play your next two games at this stage, you'd probably pick Avispa and Jubilo, and that's what they've got. So, yeah, I think by the time that derby comes around, I think they'll have done enough at that point, because also there's plenty of teams below them. There aren't many teams in wonderful form below them either. So, yeah, I think one or two wins in those games, I think that will be enough. And then that Sapporo game, especially if both teams are safe and both teams have the handbrake off, that could be 6-6. It could be anything. So I look forward to that. But, yeah, in terms of relegation, this was a slightly worrying that they just kind of sat back after 1-0. But I think the fixture list is kind enough to them that they'll keep their head above water.
Yep, okay then. And for Belmare, 14th on 30 points from 28 games. They're two ahead of Fukuoka with a game in hand on them. Their game in hand, as we've kind of touched on, is Kobe away in between match days 32 and 33. And the remainder of their fixtures, again, it depends which way you slice it, Sam, because their other five opponents are all in the top half of the table, and they're all between 5th and 9th in the current table. It's crazy how things work out like that. Some of them are going to be on the beach, and some of them, that the game will mean far less to that team than it does to Shonan. So I would back Shonan to shock at least, one and probably a couple of draws out of their five games against those teams higher up the table. So, again, it's famous last words, and I don't want to jinx them, but I'm actually feeling slightly positive about their chances of staying up with that fixture list that's in front of them.
Yeah, with due respect, I think they'd probably get something from FC Tokyo match day 32. Big game, obviously, against Vissel. Ending the season against Kashua as well, who I think Kashua have realised that, we're miles away from where we thought we'd be this season. We can finish our season now, because they've really dropped off in the last few games. So I think there are enough points in those last fixtures. Next two are quite difficult. Like Reds, they're in that ninth place. It looks like maybe they'd be a candidate to be on the beach, but they're absolutely not. They're in the best form of their season so far, so that's difficult. Cerezo are still hunting potential top three finish. So those first two games could really bring Shonan into the mire and put the pressure on that Tokyo game. But if they're still above water before the Tokyo, I think they've got enough in that last four games that they'll survive. But I'm not quite as confident as you are, but I do think Shonan have enough about them to stay up.
Well, yeah, they've been racking up the shots. They certainly haven't been shot shy in the past couple of games. Even in that 3-0 defeat last Wednesday at F Marinos, they were reining in the shots, and obviously they got their just reward and their point at the death away at Shimizu on Saturday. So we'll wait and see how they get on. Yes, Reds at home is a difficult one, obviously, and as we'll come on to later, Reds were in pretty ominous form at home against Kashua on Saturday themselves. All right, well, yeah, we're still working our way in the dogfight down and dirty down there, of course. And Kyoto, one of the other dogfighters, hosted Kashima on Saturday evening. It looked like the Sangha might be in for a long evening, as Antlers dominated the chances in the first 15 minutes, but Ryogo Yamasaki gave them a 20th minute lead against the run of play, you might say, when he received from Sota Kawasaki, turned away from Bueno and shot crisply across Yuya Oki on the turn. Sam Antlers got their equalizer when Diego Pachuca controlled a chip from Koki Yanzai and slotted past Naoto Kami Fukumoto in the 76th minute. So it was, again, another one of these games, I think, where both teams, you could see the pressure on them. Kyoto obviously fighting for their lives, and Antlers really struggling for any sort of form after winning that first game under Daiki Iwamasa. Since then, they've looked quite flat, haven't they? And, yeah, overall, this game didn't really excite apart from the two goals.
No, not really. I thought Kashima started fairly well. They freshened up their team, let's say. They played full strength in midweek. There was a few chops and changes around here. Elike got his first start. He only lasted the first 45 minutes, but I thought his movement was pretty good, the way he run down the channel. I thought he got away from the Kyoto defence on a couple of occasions. But in terms of freshening it up, yes, they freshened up the attack, but they also freshened up the back line. I always worry when Wellington Bueno is in a back line for Kashima. I don't think he played terrifically well, him and Sekikawa. I think Sekikawa has got some quality to him, but I think he often needs guidance with the player next to him. And yeah, with him, alongside Bueno, it just wasn't great. And Kyoto took advantage of that. I thought the goal that they scored was very good. I can't remember Yamasaki ever doing anything as good in his life before, but the touch, turn and finish was absolutely fantastic. And yeah, another great ball from Kawasaki, who's continuing to have a very decent season. But yeah, they just weren't able to hold on Kyoto. There was a lot of more pressure from Kashima. They put on better players, Pituka, Higuchi, etc. Came on, and I thought the goal they scored was very nice. The Anzai chip was lovely, controlled down by Pituka, and a good finish. So 1-1 I thought was pretty fair for this game. Neither team, I don't think, really deserved to win the game. Neither team really pressed home an advantage for any length of time. So yeah, but I think still a decent point for Kyoto. They'd have absolutely taken a 1-1 draw with Kashima. And again, like Shonan, they look like to be the ones that are fighting. They look like to be the ones that can steal points, even from games that don't look on paper particularly friendly. So yeah, really decent from Kyoto. They're in a good run of form, just about at the right time. So yeah, they'll take that, and still in the Emperor's Cup as well. So survival and Emperor's Cup final, I mean, that could be fantastic.
Yeah, their supporters are definitely getting their money's worth, aren't they, on their return to J1 this season. So yeah, they're going to enjoy it right to the end, I'm sure, although they might be pretty low on fingernails by the end of the season. They are 13th on 30 points, so a goal difference ahead of Shonan, and a considerable whack of goal difference as well, it should be said. They still have 7 games to play, although their games in hand are at home against leaders F Marinos this Wednesday and away to Kawasaki in between match days 32 and 33. So if they get anything at all from those two games, well, yes, it would be an absolute bonus. No question about that. Similarly to Shauna, they don't play many other dogfighters until the final day, when they travel to Iwata, who I guess we're presuming by then will have already been relegated. So hopefully for Kyoto, their season will still be have life to it when they travel to Iwata on the final day. And yes, they might need a victory there to stay up. But yeah, there's obviously still a number of teams below them before they have to worry about that at the end of the season. So, well, yeah, we're kind of using this game and the next one, F Marinos versus Fukuoka, to bridge the relegation dogfight and the top four. So, Sam, yeah, we'll talk about Antlers. You mentioned they changed their team a lot, as Hiroshima did as well after their exertions in the Emperor's Cup. So, yeah, Yuta Higuchi, Arthur Kaike, and Yuma Suzuki were, excuse me, all benched from the side that started the last league game. So they're fourth with 5 games left. Antlers are 4 points behind Hiroshima, who sit third. Antlers have No wins in four. So I guess it's hard to see them making a late run for an automatic ACL place. Their best bet obviously appears to be qualifying via the Emperor's Cup. And of course, they face Kofu in the semifinals. So we have them as strong favourites to make it through to the final, where they would face either Kyoto again or Hiroshima. But it's be frustrating for Antlers and their supporters as well, the way that things have stalled after that. It appeared that Daiki Iwamasa was going to make an instant impact. But it just hasn't gone for them in the last four league games.
No, he really hasn't made an impact. They won their first game, but not really that great. And the football has not improved. The results have not really improved at all. So, yeah, I guess I'm sure there was something behind the scenes that caused that change in manager. But, yeah, generally, I've not seen anything from Iwamasa that suggests that he is the long-term solution for Kashima. I think they've played fairly poorly. I mean, the loss of Wade, it really changed the way they were able to approach games. It was, but they have not found a solution. He hasn't found a solution. They've been pretty dull to watch. So, yeah, I'm not convinced that they have it in them to mount the proper challenge to enter the top three. Yeah, it's only 4 points, but Cerezo have games in hand. They could leapfrog them starting in midweek. So I think their best bet is the Emperor's Cup. Obviously, Kofu, you'd take a J2 team in a semi-final every day. And then, yeah, it could be a fascinating potential final with Hiroshima, although Kyoto have proven they would give them a game as well. So, yeah, I do expect and anticipate that Kashima will be focusing much more on the Emperor's Cup as the season winds down, because, yeah, it's not like normal seasons where you can leave the semi-finals and final till after the season. They're played right in the middle of it. So, yeah, I just think Kashima will have eyes diverted somewhere. They're not in great form anyway, so I think their top three chances are pretty small at the moment. Like, have you seen anything from this Kashima team that suggests that there is a turning form at some point? Because, yeah, I can't say I have.
No, it's just been really stark since the ISA Wada left, hasn't it? And, you can pretty much point to that point in time in the season where things have just, well, not taken a turn for the worse. I think that's a little bit strong. But, yeah, you could see they were really, they'd begun to lack a cutting edge. And Yuma Suzuki had obviously been so effective working in tandem with Wada earlier on in the season. And, the fact that he was going to be relied on for more than just putting things on a plate for Wader, and he would have to carry his weight with goals. That hasn't happened for him. And obviously Everaldo hasn't been able to hit the heights of two seasons ago, apart from his Puskas Award winner, of course. But it's a strange one. Obviously a club so accustomed to success, and wearing opponents down over the course of a season, they weren't always the flashiest or indeed the best team on paper, but they just had that winning mentality that served them so well for so long. Something in the water, I think I used to say a lot about Kashima. But I think that that mystique has started to fade, and Hiroshima aren't out of reach if they have any sort of a letdown after Saturday's heavy defeat at Kawasaki. Antlers could strike, but as I said, after four straight without a win, it's hard to see them pushing themselves above Sanfrecce in the remainder of the season. All right, we'll move up to the table toppers then. Yokohama F. Marinos hosted Fukuoka on Saturday evening, their second game of the week, obviously at home at the Nissan Stadium after taking care of Shonan on Wednesday night. But Fukuoka almost made an ideal start inside the first 10 minutes when Wanma surged into the box on the right. But F. Marino's keeper, Yohei Takaoka, got a hand to his shot before Tomoki Iwata hacked the loose ball away as it crept towards goal. But the hosts shrugged off that scare and took the lead with what proved to be the only goal of the game in the 14th minute. Kota Mizunuma fizzing in a pass to Takuma Nishimura, who one-timed into the path of Anderson Lopez, the big man able to take two steadying touches before slotting home past Masaaki Murakami for his second of the week. Unfortunately, though, for F. Marino, Sam, they lost to Nishimura 10 minutes later. He was basically kicked out of the game by Tatsuki Nara. There's a pretty incriminating video going around on Twitter of Nara doing a job on Nishimura's ankle. Somehow this was not adjudicated on by VAR. Looked a pretty clear red card, I think, to most of us. And unfortunately for F. Marinos, it looked like Nishimura might be set for a spell on the sidelines. And I think Nara probably should be as well.
Absolutely. I thought it was a really poor tackle, especially when you watch it back a couple of times. And there was that red card for Ricardo Graza for a fairly similar challenge, but I don't think it was anywhere near as bad as this Nara one. So absolutely no consistency there. Hopefully it's not too bad an injury for Nishimura, because he's been, fantastic, hasn't he? One of the signings of the season, and one of the surprise signings of the season as well, Nishimura. So, really poor challenge. There's been a few of them from Abyssal. I don't know if it's just frustration or whatnot, but you've seen that Grolly's been suspended fairly recently. Daiki Mia had a poor challenge the other week. Now Nara as well. So, I don't know if it's just they're frustrated. They're not getting the rub of the green they feel on certain instances, and it's just not going for Avispa. It's poor challenges, and you don't want to see it. But I don't think there's any sort of retrospective way that this is going to be sorted out. I don't see. I mean, maybe they'll talk about it on Judge Replay. I'm not sure. But poor challenge, and it was not the greatest game in the world. I thought Marinos, it was a lovely goal the way that they created that, with Mizunuma Nishimura, of course, involved onto Anderson Lopez, and he actually took his time for once and composed himself to find the corner. But otherwise, it was a bitty game. It wasn't vintage F. Marinos at all, but Avispa just lack any sort of attacking quality, don't they? You can see quite clearly why they've only scored 21 goals this season, and you as a Tokyo supporter must be wondering why so many of them came against you.
We were happy to help out, but if they're not going to hold up their end of the bargain and stay up, I think we did as much as we could for Avispa this season, but unfortunately they weren't able to break through again against F. Marinos, and it's three straight losses now, and obviously a long winless run for Fukuoka. I think we were worried about this, and you flagged it very early, obviously, Sam, the Sanga sliding down the table, and that certainly has happened. I think, did Avispa sneak up on us slightly? They find themselves right down in 16th now, as we said, after going such a long time without a win. I think the difference is that, Shonan and Kyoto have been able to scratch out the odd victory here and there, and obviously draws over the weekend against teams higher up the table. Shonan obviously slightly higher up the table in a relegation six-pointer. But Fukuoka, as we said, it just hasn't gone for them, and things do look pretty grim at the moment.
Yeah, I made the mistake of thinking that maybe when they signed a better striker like John Mary, they might have started him in a couple of games and maybe could have looked more of an attacking threat. But he saw off Kobe home and away in the League Cup because of COVID cases, and he's only started one league game since. So, that's just my thought on that. Maybe play your best players going forward and you might get a little bit of joy. But they just look toothless. They've tried various formations, and Wanmar, I think he works hard, and he had that one decent run in this one, but I never back him to score a goal in any position, really. I mean, I just don't think he's a J1 level striker. Lukian just hasn't worked out, and they still some more selection. Like Jordi Crewe, I think, should start every game for them. I think he's the best creative player, but he doesn't always. And then he's always withdrawn fairly early if he does start. So I just think they are so focused on keeping the door shut at the back that they kind of forget that they have to go out and score goals. And it was fine last season when they were in mid-table and they could get out of those draws, but now the impetus is on them, especially now they're in the bottom three. They have to come out and try and win some games, and I'm not 100% sure they're set up in terms of personnel or in terms of mentality to be able to do that. So I'm quite worried for Avispa, which I know that a lot of people listening to this won't be happy to hear, but those next three games are huge. Shimizu, Vissel and Consadole Sapporo. They have to get some points there. Otherwise, they might be in serious trouble.
Yeah, it does look that way. And as you say, yeah, the lower scorers in the top flight, they need to find some goals and they need to find them sharpish. Yes, so get John Mary in from the start. And, well, yeah, you can't go any worse, can you, Avispa? So we'll wait and see how they handle, yeah, Shimizu at home this coming weekend. All right, well, yeah, we've just about made it through the match day 29 fixtures. We've got a couple of mid-table battles to handle at the end of the episode. But coming up next, joining us to talk about Kawasaki's win over Hiroshima is Neil Debnam. Always great to welcome Neil Debnam back to the podcast, especially when I'm sure he's a cock-a-hoop after a Kawasaki Frontale victory on this occasion on Saturday night, 4-0 at home over Hiroshima. Neil, welcome back to the podcast. How are you?
Thank you for having me. I'd say I'm cocker semicircle, if that makes sense. Cautiously cocker hoop or something. Not cautiously, yeah. Half a hoop, basically, yeah.
Fair enough. Well, now that you've seen off for Sean and Belmara, you don't have to worry about them for the remainder of the season. I guess, yes, the stretch run kicked back into gear for your side on Saturday night. As we mentioned right back at the start of the episode, Neil, it was a much changed Hiroshima side after their exertions in the Emperor's Cup quarterfinals in midweek. But yeah, you can only beat the side that's put in front of you. And Frontale well and truly took this Hiroshima side to the cleaners in basically what shaped as the only game left between title challengers, the only game that remaining on the slate between teams in the top three. And so it shaped as a huge one, but your side more than took care of business.
Yeah, I reckon they changed so many players because they based their selection on the previous week's game against Shonan. They obviously watched that game and thought they could probably play the youth team and beat us. So it was nice. It was a really nice to get back to winning ways. I don't want to be too negative because, maybe I should, because that's what people expect from me. But after the previous week, it felt like a little bit too little, too late, perhaps. I mean, I know the gap is not huge, but I, without wanting to sort of jump to conclusions immediately, I think that I feel that we are much more likely to mess up than Yokohama are in the sort of remaining games. I should be positive and say that it was a very enjoyable game to watch.
Just your negativity never fails to astound me after a 4-0 victory. But so you mentioned the Shonan result there, and what do you think changed in this? Was it just purely that you were playing against maybe a weakened team that weren't quite at it, or do you think there were some changes made by Mr. Oniki to really get the best out of this team? Because this was more of a vintage Frontale performance, for want of a better expression, than it was against Shonan, where you were quite poor even after going ahead.
Yeah, I think it wasn't a matter of changes in this game. I think it was a matter of lack of changes in the last game, because Oniki does like to keep a winning side going, and occasionally that does mean he sort of screws this winning side into the ground until they can barely walk. And I think basically against Shonan, the players were kind of the same. I think it's like a couple of changes at the most, and they were enforced, and we just looked tired and kind of hopeless. I think the problem was too many games in too short time with absolutely no rotation. Absolutely no, that's a bit unfair, with extremely little rotation, but that has been kind of his trademark. And since I became a calmer person on Twitter, I won't go on Twitter and get angry about it because people tell me off. So I think it was unfortunate that we were so lackluster in that game. And so sort of go on to a more sort of broader point of negativity, I think at the end of the year, when we haven't won the title, I think we will look back on that game, the first game against Shonan at home, the two Jubilo Iwata games, Kyoto away. There's so many games that we should have not lost or not drawn 1-1 with a last minute goal. So I think we've missed way too many chances and way too many good opportunities to sort of do better this year. So I think tiredness is what I'd put that down to. And I suspected after that game that the next game would be the same lineup pretty much, and it was, because we had a week in between that game and the Stan Frecce game, so it kind of didn't surprise me that there was, I think there was just the one change at left back, and possibly that was due to an injury. He's a man who knows what he likes, Oniki, and he sticks with what he likes.
Indeed. Well, Hiroshima much changed, as we said. A number of the first team players, regular members of their best 11 were absent from the starting lineup, but they almost took the lead in the 24th minute. It took a fine reflex save from Junsung Ryong onto the roof of the net after a San Frecce corner was flicked on at the near post, and Hiroshima man of the moment, Takumu Kawamura, improvised a shot that looked like it was heading in. Kawamura handed a rare start here, obviously as a result of all of those changes that Michael Skibber was forced into, but Akihiro Ienaga got Frontale rolling 11 minutes before halftime. He shot home from alongside the penalty spot after an Asahi Sasaki cutback, and there could have been much better for Frontale before halftime, but Keisuke Osako made a couple of big saves. But Ienaga has been absolutely tremendous, hasn't he, in this this run that's seen you work your way right back into title contention, Neil, and he's back to his vintage best as well, and has really ended the season on a high.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think in the last few blog posts I've done, I mean, probably apart from the Shonan one, which was a slightly different kind of mood to that one, that I've just been alternating my man of the match between Ienaga and Joanne Schmidt, because both of them are really, really on fire at the moment, I think. And in a way, maybe to sort of veer off the point slightly, I think the good form of Joanne Schmidt has caused some more tactical inflexibility from us, because I feel like he's undroppable now, but Tachibanada is also undroppable. So maybe we've got Tachibanada and playing a little bit further forward, because, well, thankfully not a left back. I shouldn't say I want him back there again. But I think now Joanne Schmidt, Tachibanada and Wakizaka are the midfield three. And maybe that isn't our best midfield three, but you can't really argue with playing players who are in really good form. But sort of to go back to Ienaga, I think, so apologies for that motorbike going past the house there. Ienaga, I feel like perhaps we need to treat him more kindly. No, that sounds stupid. I mean, I think we need to look after him a bit more, because he has great runs of form, but then I think he's probably played a little bit too much. I mean, it's great that he wants to play all the time, but I feel like maybe he's a player who could occasionally do with a rest. And probably sort of the defeat to Shonan and the week that we had in between that game and this game probably was something like a rest, because a lot of our players didn't really play at all in the Shonan game. So maybe that was 90 minutes of rest with a week of rest afterwards. And I think he's on fire, and I hope he can keep it going till the end of the season. But I wouldn't be upset if he's rested for a game here and there, because I just do think that's our problem at the moment, that if we've got the preferred lineup playing and they're not absolutely knackered, I think we're doing all right. It's just a matter of sort of retaining some kind of energy, I guess.
Yeah, it's an interesting point that Neil makes about Schmidt, Sam, because we obviously wondered what had happened to him. Basically, he'd been exiled by Toru Aniki for so long, but now that he has been given an extended run in the team, we can see again how good he is. And he's played obviously a key part in the Frontale revival. Obviously, that long winning streak that was snapped by Shonan before they've hopefully started a new one on Saturday night. But Schmidt's a kind of a reclamation project. Well, obviously, we all knew how good Ienaga was, and he's proven that throughout the second half of the season. But Schmidt's an interesting one, isn't he?
Yeah, it was very weird, wasn't it, when he went into his extended period in the doghouse. But I think he came back in during the various COVID cases, so there was no choice but to play Schmidt because he was one of the very few people that was available. And it, yeah, he's taken his chance. Well, he's just so classy, isn't he? Just sat in front of the defence, that he sprays his balls out. He is able to kind of take up good positions as well defensively. He reads the play really well. It's just, yeah, a tremendous player who I just don't understand what he did wrong to not be able to get into this team and play. It was great for Tadji Banadar, it allowed him to break through, but yeah, Schmidt is just a quality player and he definitely adds a lot to this midfield. So yeah, just really liked him. You know, yes, he's 36 and plays almost every minute, and you'd expect maybe rest him occasionally, because even though he might just fool you with the way that he plays, and it doesn't look like he's putting in any energy at all for most of the game, so maybe that confuses people and that's why he doesn't get rested at all. But yeah, he's played very well, and I think the outlet you've got with Marcinho as well, a different type of player, but he is the one that is going to go beyond the defence. He is the one that stretches them, and yeah, he was at the heart of most of the goals in this game, at least within the build-up. And yeah, how do you rate Marcinho and how he's improved this season?
Yeah, I think he's another undroppable, really. But then I'm saying we should rotate, but he feels like he's the big difference between us losing and winning, basically. I guess especially because of the way Iheanacho plays. Iheanacho's on the opposite side of the pitch to him, but really doesn't play the same position. So basically, Iheanacho goes where he wants, and that leaves us kind of lopsided. So it does make sense that a lot of stuff goes through Marcinho, because there's no one on the other side. He's probably like, I don't know, going in goal for a bit or something, Iheanacho. But I think when he came to us, people were a little bit concerned that he didn't have a great goal scoring record in his career. I think that's what people said anyway. But he misses a few. But I mean, everybody does, and he doesn't miss as many as some of our other players do. So I feel a bit sorry for Miyagi, because with sort of in past years, we've had a massive amount of those left sided attacking players, and now we're probably just down to Marcinho and Miyagi, with Mitoma gone and Hasegawa's gone and Saito's gone and Abe's gone. All the players who used to play there, that sort of over in the past, that overpopulated position is now sort of up for grabs. But it's not, because Marcinho is doing so well. So delighted that he's doing so well, of course. And so if you check his Instagram, he's got some. I mean, I'm not a fashion expert. I mean, that's a huge understatement. But I can see that he's got some kind of style. It's not a style I would wear myself. But his Instagram is always entertaining with his his outfits. So not only is he a stylish. This is going horrendously down a cliche cul-de-sac. So I'll just stop it there. He's great.
I could see what you were trying to do there. No, I was in favour of it, but that's okay. If you decided to abort, then that's understandable as well. But yeah, I mean, terrific player, and you've unearthed yet another gem. There's no question about that in Marcinho. He's obviously missing his buddy Leandro Damião at the moment, but he's carrying on regardless. And two more assists here. The first was for Frontale's second goal just before the hour, when his improvised pass into the path of Yasuto Wakizaka allowed the midfielder time from to fire home from just inside the penalty spot. Wakizaka was then brought down by a clumsy tackle in the box by Jelani Sumiyoshi, and Kei Chinen netted the resulting penalty with about 20 minutes to go. Then after Marcinho's curler was palmed away by Keisuke Osako, Iheanacho capped the scoring by blasting home the loose ball to seal an emphatic Frontale victory in the 78th minute. So, regular listeners know, Neil, that more often than not, despite Frontale's success over the past five seasons, you're not often the most positive, and you've already mentioned a couple of times you don't think Frontale are going to claim the title this season. And the gap, while it's only 3 points, I can see where you're coming from. F. Marinos definitely have the better looking fixture list remaining. There's no question about that. So you're definitely hoping for a slip up from F. Marinos, or I suppose for F. Marinos' opponents to keep kicking their best attackers out of games, as one of your old favourites, Tatsuki Nara, did to Takuma Nishimura on Saturday night. I'm not sure if you've caught the clip that's going around on Twitter, but Nara certainly did a number on Nishimura's ankle. And, you don't hope injuries on anybody, but, there's a lot of factors that will contribute to who wins the title in the remaining 7 games that both you and F. Marinos have to play. But, you're obviously hoping that they're going to slip up on a banana skin or two.
Yeah, and after, my previous 3 shirts have been, this year's shirt is Sukugawa.
Love him, love him.
It seemed like a good idea at the start of the season, but right now, I don't think I'll be wearing that to the last game of the season anyway.
no.
In Ajinomoto. So,
well, for the irony, maybe you should, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I love him, and I can't fault him for going to FC Tokyo, because he wasn't going to get a chance with us. And the moves worked for him, the moves worked for you, and he almost got the hat trick, which I predicted in the previous game. Well, predicted? I wouldn't say I predicted it. I think I was wishing for it. And please, anyone who thinks that I have psychic powers, you can go back and check my blog post. I didn't predict. I'm sure it was a fair challenge from Nara. Obviously, I can't say that I've seen it. Maybe I might have seen a picture or two, but he's a good guy, so I'm sure that he didn't intend to do anything. And I think probably they should have referred it. They shouldn't have referred it to VAR, because he didn't get booked, did he? Okay, yeah, it's fine as it was. And it's unfortunate that the Marinos player rolled over on his ankle when Nara took the ball cleanly. But yeah, I know, I'm just waiting for Hatate to do something, because he's the other one of the last 3 shirts. So I don't know quite how he could sabotage Yokohama F. Marinos. But yeah, if he could somehow get some kind of a sabotage move in over the next few games, that would be much appreciated.
Maybe he can rock up in the national team and take out 1 or 2 in friendly fire in training.
Sorry, I'm not laughing. Please, can you cut that out?
so we can look ahead, I suppose, to what Frontale have got in store. But I guess, Sam, as we wrap up the game from Todoroki on Saturday night, I guess, Frontale have run out well and truly deserved winners. But just from, a neutral's perspective, and from the spectacle of, as I said, what shaped as the most high-profile game involving teams in the top 3 in the remainder of the season, it's just a shame, the team that Hiroshima are able to put out, and I guess B, the fact that they weren't able to match Frontale's intensity, and I guess it obviously to be expected with a much changed lineup. But unfortunately the game didn't live up to expectations at all, did it?
No, not really. And this is a couple of games now when the title contender matches where Sofretje have been fairly handily beaten, but previously by F. Marinos, and now this one. But yeah, it could have been a different story if Kawamura's shot went in. It was a terrific save from Jung, but really they just didn't get to grips with Kawasaki. I thought they were quicker. Some of the interplay was, it was so difficult for Hiroshima to get to grips with. And when you make so many changes, I think there are players that don't quite know the system quite as well, which is a worry I had for them for a lot of the season. They've been able to generally play pretty much the same team all the way through, which has contributed to their fantastic form under Michael Skipper. But once you make those changes, I don't think Sumiyoshi, I think this is first league start, and you could tell that he wasn't quite up to date with how they wanted to play. I don't think he was quite to the pace of the game either. That was shown in his tackle for the penalty. So yeah, it was a real shame that they weren't able to put out a proper team in this game and really give it a proper go. But for them, if they finish third and they manage to get to the Emperor's Cup semi-final as well, it's still a very good season for them. And you can sort of understand why they might have prioritised the Emperor's Cup, because with Marinos and Frontale, both with two games in hand, both of them aren't going to slip up, you don't think, to an extent that would allow Hiroshima to have a really good go at the title. So, yeah, I can understand the priorities. And it just shows maybe they're a little bit away from these top two, and there still are things they need to work on in the off-season after a terrific season for Hiroshima.
Well, that's right. I mean, yeah, we wondered whether their depth would be strong enough to see them through at the end of the day. And I guess the answer is that it wasn't, and that was laid pretty bare on the pitch at Todoroki on Saturday night. So, Neil, I don't know, coming up against an opponent, you know, we don't want to throw too many caveats at this performance, because Frontale have scored, you know, three excellent goals from open play and won a perfectly legitimate penalty and won this game ultimately very convincingly. But do you wish they had to put up a slightly better performance to test your guys a little bit more? Because you obviously would have been expecting a tough game against them coming in, and then seeing the lineups, I guess you might have thought that things might have been slightly more comfortable, and it ultimately turned out that way. But I guess, were you slightly disappointed you didn't see a better version of Hiroshima on the night? I suppose I should have asked you from the start.
No, absolutely not. I'd rather they'd played even fewer normal starting members.
Right, okay.
I think at this stage we just want things to be as simple as possible, really. I think in a way, I don't think when we went into the sort of off the pitch at the end of the game, we would have been disappointed that we hadn't beaten their full strength team. I think the victory was everything we needed, and I'm sure we will, or I hope we will, sort of take that on to the next game, that kind of confidence.
Yeah, so talking about that next game, it's Nagoya away. You've already said about the lack of rotation, how that might worry you going into that game. What do you make of Nagoya as an opponent? They're a team in mid-table, nothing really to play for. Are they the sort of team that you think Kawasaki match up nicely to, or do you worry that stubborn defensive, the kind of way that they can play, might be one that leads to a frustrating night?
Yeah, this is a weird game, really, I guess, because Nagoya haven't been very Nagoya-y this year, if that's a word. And this will be the second time we've gone to this game, because the first time we couldn't get we could get a refund on our like travel and hotel, but it was like only 40% of the amount we've paid. So we've already done this away trip without actually visiting, having the game. So I'm really pleased to go there and actually watch some football this time. And it's a singing game, so that'll be good too. I'd be really surprised if he changes anyone. And we've got Kashiwa on Saturday as well. And to be honest, I can't see him changing the starting lineup at all, really. Maybe change the left back, but Sasaki was really good, I thought, against Hiroshima. I mean, one thing that Oniki liked to do in the past was play players against their old teams, but because this is like a new kind of slightly sort of laser focused but in a strange way on Iki, I think maybe he might drop Joanne Schmidt for the Nagoya game just to sort of totally confuse matters, and that could be good for Chanatip, I guess, because I feel like that's why Chanatip's not in the squad, or not in the starting lineup at the moment, which was particularly weird because Saturday was a Thai-themed game at Todoroki, with Thai ambassador taking a penalty kick, Thai fans in the stands, Thai musician at halftime, and one Thai player with making one, probably having one touch in the last sort of 45 seconds of the game. So, I mean, that's, for me, that's a classic Oniki sort of power, but the power move? I don't know how to really describe it, but I think it's his club, basically. He makes the decisions, and I think he's not going to bow to sentimentality. So I think in the same way that Chanatip got 45 seconds and one touch of the ball, perhaps he doesn't want to be sentimental and will leave out Joanne Schmidt and we'll probably lose. But yeah, I think, I don't know, do we want to be playing teams with nothing to play for at this stage? Perhaps, yeah. I think that's the only hope we have with Marinos, that the teams that they're playing, who are sort of more in the in the danger zone at the bottom might hopefully raise their game and do something. But yeah, I can't say I'm overly optimistic, of course, but you'd expect nothing less. But yeah, I don't know. I'm not optimistic. We'll probably lose. But you know me, I like a reverse jinx, if that makes sense. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's Nagoya away on Wednesday, and as you said, Kashiwa away on the weekend. And then when you return from the international break, it's another nice away up to Sapporo before you finish with Shimizu at home, Kyoto at home in your last game in hand, then Kobe at home in a run of three straight at Todoroki before, yes, that you wear your Sukugawa kit to FC Tokyo away on the final day of the season. So, I mean, I think we've said it a couple of times. F Marinos have the easier run in. It's Frontale have it all to do. They'll be hoping for slip-ups from F Marinos in the remainder of the season. But, if it's to be a fifth league title in six seasons, then you're well and truly going to have to earn it, Neil. I guess much like way back, if you can remember, right back when you won the first one the goal difference against Kashima, that time when you broke your duck, it was a fight to the death on that occasion. And who knows, it might go down to the final day again. And F Marinos have Kobe, don't they? And you have FC Tokyo. So there's a storylines aplenty there. But so much water to go under the bridge in the meantime. Sam, did you have anything else for Neil before we let him get on with the remainder of his evening?
No, I don't think so. I think we've drawn out all the positivity we can from Neil in this game. So, just wish you all the best for the rest of the season. It should be a really fascinating one. I know you're not necessarily believing in it, and I don't know if many neutrals are going for another Kawasaki victory, but we're neutral at the podcast and we'll be supporting either team. So yeah, good luck. It should be a fascinating final game. But what would it mean to win another title against FC Tokyo on the final day?
I've got my fingers in my ears when you answer this.
I mean, I think, to be honest, I'm just gonna offend horrendously a horrendous amount of people with this answer. But I think recently, I mean, FC Tokyo and Marinos were always the two, I think, that we wanted to beat the most. But I think now it's really Marinos, I guess, because they're more successful and more likely to win the league. Mm. So I think it doesn't really, I think I personally won't, like, enjoy it more because it's at Ajinomoto Stadium. Particularly, I'm not that kind of sort of petty person. Well, if it was at Nissan Stadium, though, that would be quite good. I think if we can sort of still be in it in the last game, that'll be quite a nice day out. Yeah, I mean that's what I can hope for, that we've still got something to play for in that game. But it would be a bummer, wouldn't it, if Sukugawa took the title from us with another brace. But yeah, I'm definitely not going to wear that shirt.
Well, yeah, as Sam said there, yeah, as neutrals here, all we can do is hope that the title race lasts as long as it can. And yeah, if it does go to the final day, well, then we weigh the chips for where they may. And unfortunately for most other neutrals, yeah, it looks like Hiroshima's task is too difficult for them after dropping that result at Todoroki on Saturday night. But Neil, yes, all we can do is wish you and your side all the best for the remainder. Hope it lasts as long as it can. And as I said, may the chips fall where they may. Thanks for joining us again, and once again, good luck for the rest of the way.
Cheers, thanks a lot. And same to your lot, and your lot, sorry, it's very dismissive. Same to your guys, apart from the last day. If you could just, I mean, we gave you Sukugawa, so just give us 3 points on the last day, please.
Well, we'll see about that. All right, well, thanks again to Neil Debnam for joining us. Sam and I have got a couple more games to review before we wrap up this episode. So after a quick hit of music, we will do just that. All right, then let's wrap up our review of the Match Day 29 slate with two, I guess, mid-table fixtures. Sam, a couple of entertaining games. We'll begin with the Cerezo Osaka's win over Tosu at home. It was a big day for milestones at Cerezo, with the club celebrating goalkeeper Kim Jin-hyun's 350th J-League appearance and the 250th for Hiroaki Okuno and 200th for Riku Matsuda. The hosts left it late, but won at the death. Firstly, for them, Tokuma Suzuki's ridiculous volley from 30 yards that went in off the underside of the bar gave them the lead 7 minutes into the second half. Fuchi Honda side-footed home a low ball from Diego with 8 minutes left to draw Tosu level, but not for the first time this season. Jean Patrick won it for Cerezo with a second-half stoppage time winner. This one in the 93rd minute. His header, in inverted commas, from Hiroshi Kiyotake's cross. I say in inverted commas because he kind of mistimed his jump, and the ball actually ended up going in off his thigh. But they all count, and Cerezo remain, I guess, Sam, on the fringes of the ACL hunt after their first win in three. They're 6 points behind third place Hiroshima with the two games in hand on them.
Yeah, they're still definitely in it. They've got their games in hand. Reds in midweek is a difficult one. Then FC Tokyo. So you never know. They're right. They're still in that hunt. They'll be fairly hopeful. That this was a crucial victory, I thought, because I think I mentioned earlier the Sapporo loss and the manner of that loss. And they did it exactly the same in the Emperor's Cup against Hiroshima. And then in this game, they took the lead again, but were pegged back. And it was thinking, oh, are they going to do it three times in a row? But this time it was them who got that last minute winner. It was a bit of quality from Kiyotake, that cross, and yeah, John Patrick, who cares how it goes in, as long as it goes in at that stage. But yeah, the only thing to take away from this game really is Suzuki's goal. It's an absolutely incredible strike, dipping volley in off the underside of the crossbar. I think those are some of the best looking goals, when they just clip the crossbar and go in. So yeah, fantastic goal for Cerezo. It was a decent game overall. I thought both teams played fairly well, but yeah, it was a big one for Cerezo. Just keeps them in the hunt after the disappointment of going out in the Emperor's Cup, so they've still got a target they can look to, and it's not without not out of their reach. So yeah, it makes for an interesting game on Wednesday, because Reds are probably the informed team in the league, and they're maybe playing party poopers at either end of the table this season.
Indeed, indeed. And yeah, you mentioned earlier on, Sam, that the Reds are pretty much in the best form they've been in all season. And yeah, it looks like a really interesting clash on Wednesday night when they host Cerezo. Reds coming off a 4-1 home win over Kashiwa, and it could have been several more. Reds were terrific in this game, made a dream start when Tomoaki Okubo did superbly in midfield to turn away from his man and slip in Yusuke Matsuo, who fired past Masato Sasaki in just the seventh minute. Next, Atsuki Ito played a defense-splitting through ball to release Alex Schalk, who saw his initial shot saved by Sasaki, but tucked home the loose ball to put Reds 2-0 up. In the 24th minute, just before the hour, Tetsuya Chinen tapped in from the goal line after a completely unmarked Takehiro Akimoto improvised a volley with the outside of his left foot from a corner. From there, I guess, Reds were in absolute cruise control, Sam, and Zion Suzuki had been a spectator up to that point. He then was called into action three times in 90 seconds, but was equal to the task to keep out Hiromu Mutsumaru, Yuki Muto, and Takuto Kato. But then, Alex Schultz added the icing on the cake from the penalty spot with 5 minutes left, although there was still time for a racehole consolation with a minute to go when Mao Hosoya scored after Suzuki palmed down a shot from Yuki Muto. But yes, this was at Reds at their irresistible best. And, their supporters had a lovely Saturday evening out at Saitama Stadium, but some of them might have gone home wondering why they didn't see more performances like this earlier on in the season.
Yeah, I think we've said that a little while for the last few weeks now, and they've really got into some terrific form. They're showing that pace in their attacks that they showed in the Super Cup, they showed it throughout the Champions League, and they're just really on one at the moment. And yeah, it is a little too little too late, but it shows what is there this team is capable of, because I think Kashua just didn't deal with them at all. They're in poor form, Kashua. I think there's only Shonan Iwata and Fukuoka who are in worse form this season, in the last six games, sorry. So they were there for the picking, but just the way that they carved through them time and again was just, yeah, irresistible at times, Reds. And yeah, as I said, they're a team nobody wants to play at the moment, I don't think. Yes, they're a mid-table team. Yes, there's not really anything. They're not likely to challenge for an ACL spot or anything like that, but they are just in such a groove at the moment. They're going to be very difficult for anyone to come up against. So yeah, they'll have a big say, I think, in the outcomes of both maybe the title and the relegation battle. Yeah, they were very good here, but Raysal, I think, are a team that are maybe on the beach already. They have to perform so well this season to be up where they have been against all expectations. But yeah, I think they've just hit a little bit of a roadblock now and maybe might settle into more of a upper mid-table position to where come the end of the season.
Well, yeah, that's it. I mean, we wondered a couple of times, I think, over the journey whether, yeah, Raysal had a couple of blips and that might have spelt the end of their time up at the sharp end of the table. Up until this point, obviously, they've always had a response and they've always been able to put in good performances to keep them up in and around the top four. But yeah, this at this occasion, yeah, they're obviously really struggling. No wins in their last five in the form table. And well, they're obviously not going to fall away because the points that they've banked earlier on in the season has made sure of that. And that's to their absolute credit. But yeah, I think you could see on Saturday night, a team in their pomp at the moment, Reds, were simply too good for them. And in many respects, the Raysal's race might have been run. But again, that's not to take away from what they've done and defied expectations through, the first three quarters of this season. It's been absolutely astonishing. And they still, it should be said, are 5 points clear of the team that took them to the cleaners on Saturday night, albeit Reds do have two games in hand on Kashua. And with that comprehensive victory for Reds taken care of, that is indeed all of the Matchday 29 slate handled and reviewed, Sam. So all that's left to do is to look ahead to the next few days in J1 and the Japanese footballing calendar. As we've mentioned a few times throughout the course of the episode, there are some games in hand to be made up on Wednesday night. Nagoya host Kawasaki in a COVID-affected game from Matchday 22. Then three games from Matchday 26 when the ACL knockout stage clubs were on continental duty will be played. Kyoto host the leaders Yokohama F. Marinos, Kobe entertain FC Tokyo, and yes, as we've just mentioned, Urawa host Cerezo. Then on Thursday, Sam, we'll get the latest Japan national team squad announcement from Hajime Moriyasu. Then obviously the Matchday 30, as we really get down into the nitty gritty, a number of teams only have five games left to play, and it shapes as a fascinating weekend, although not too many of the fixtures really jump out at you off the page, do they?
Yeah, there's not really many standout fixtures, but they're all important at this stage of the season. I think this is the last game week before we then head into the home stretch. So you've got to set yourself up before this international break. You don't want to be spending a couple of weeks stuck in the relegation zone, for example, and stewing on that. But yeah, the one game, I think it has to be Vissel Kobe versus Gamba Osaka. It's looking fairly likely that maybe one of these teams at least is going to go down, and massive giants really for the J-League. Gamba obviously do so well. Kobe have got all the money and everything, so that is a huge game. No, I don't expect it to be the greatest game of football at all, but the atmosphere, the intensity, it should be all there. So yeah, Sunday night, I think we're saving the best till last this weekend.
Yeah, most definitely. So, I mean, I could have asked you for a pick of the weekend, but there's no other place it could be than the Noivir Stadium on Sunday when, Vissel host Gamba. These teams obviously have previous down in the relegation zone. Both went down together at the end of the 2012 season. I don't think that's going to happen again this year. But as you say, Sam, yeah, it's a definite possibility that at least one of them will be playing J2 football in 2023. And who knows, the result on Sunday might play a huge role in which one, if any, of them will go down. So, one game on Friday, five on Saturday, and the three on Sunday highlighted by Kobe versus Gumba. But, of course, there's another relegation six-pointer when Fukuoka host Shimizu, which should be fascinating in its own right. So we will leave it there, obviously, and look forward to the games on Wednesday and indeed Mr. Moriyasu's squad announcement the following day. And Sam, we'll look forward to reviewing match day 30 and indeed touching on these midweek games with you in next week's episode.
Yeah, it should be good. I'm looking forward to the midweek games especially. I think there's some cracking tyres there. And then, yeah, who knows what we're going to deal with the Japan national team squad. Maybe a surprise and a really exciting attacking squad ahead of those games. But, yeah, I don't expect it. And, it's a shame that it's rolled around so quickly because I've not really enjoyed the national team for a while. But, yeah, hopefully something just positive comes out of that and we have a really exciting last match day before the international break.
Indeed, hear, hear to that. All right, well, that is it for this week's episode of the J-Talk podcast. Sam and I would like to thank Neil Debnam again very much for his time in part two of this week's episode. We'd like to thank all of our patrons for their ongoing support on Patreon. If you'd like to get involved, please visit patreon.com/JTalkPod. And we'd like to thank you, listeners, for listening wherever you are. We'll be back next week to review J1 Match Day 30. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The J-Talk Podcast.